This podcast is
Welcome to the Maggie Power and the Bag Show. That's not what this show's about.
It ain't.
No. Here, watch this. Welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. Texas, it's not just for cow-tippin' rednecks.
Whoa, hello, it's Michael Herron. Welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. This is episode number 45. Is that it? Yeah, 45. Today is April 25th, 2006. It's a Tuesday. It's partly cloudy and warm in Houston, Texas, which is where I'm broadcasting from. I'm such a fucking cheese ball, but I'm watching my language, so ignore that. I've been doing really good. If you notice, I haven't really done much cussing. Hold, please. Horns, I need you to back off a little. Thank you. Today's guest is Jerry Larson. I just got off the phone with him a few minutes ago and had a great conversation, albeit brief. But we cut to the core of the Green Party and why Jerry suggests you should vote for Green Party. And I'm leaning pretty strongly that way myself. Of course, I'd love to hear your feedback about that. You can email me at MikeyPod.com. You can put comments on the blog at MikeyPod.com. What? MikeyPod at gmail.com is the email address. And the phone number, which I have now affixed to my monitor screen, is 206-339-6682. I got a lot of great feedback this week, which I'll be sharing with you today, as well as this interview with Mr. Larson. Okay, I'm multitasking. You can tell when that happens because my voice just stops talking. So I guess it's not really multitasking because I'm only still doing one thing. I just pretend that maybe I'm still talking. That was fascinating. All right, let's get on with some music. I heard this song on the Tower of Song podcast. It's called Tearing Up the Oxygen, and it's by Maritime. It's a great song. In fact, I didn't hear the rest of this podcast because I was so intent on tracking down the song before I forget about it. Still coughing. So let's go right on into the song. It's called Tearing Up the Oxygen, as I just said. The band's name is Maritime, and I found it over at the IOTA Alliance. And you can find it there, too. Or you can buy it at iTunes or eMusic. I believe both of those. And there will be links on the site. In fact, I think in the links they give me to post with this, it also just provides a free download link. So if you don't want to support the artist, feel free to download it for free. And I think that's all I got for you. So here is Maritime with Tearing Up the Oxygen.
I should be so lucky.
Isn't that a great song? That's Maritime with Tearing Up the Oxygen from the album We the Vehicles. I love that. I got it from, well, I told you this already, from IOTA. I'm going to memorize that for next week. I think I have the window right up here. Okay. Please hold. Independent Online Distribution Alliance. Awesome, beautiful site. I love it. So you can go check this song out at iTunes or eMusic. And if I'm not mistaken, the links they give me, I mean, I just cut and paste these links they have on the website for podcasters to use. They provide a free download of this song. So you're not breaking any laws if you want to just download it from me. It'll take you to their site, I think, first. But yeah, I don't know if that worked for me from Tower of Song podcast, just because I'm already a member of IOTA or not. But let me know. Let me know what you find out if you try to download it from MikeyPod.com. After this promo from Tower of Song podcast, which I'm totally digging lately, I'll go right into the interview with Jerry Larson from the Green Party. So thanks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for continuing to listen beyond all of this.
Hi, this is Tim Harlow, host, writer, producer, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of the Tower of Song podcast from Dallas, Texas. Discovering great music is an adventure, and you never know where you're going to find it. Sounds like a Forrest Gump moment about to happen. Tower Song is about finding those great songs that you will never, and I repeat never, find on FM radio. From pop to rock and everything in between, join me at www.towerofsong.net or enter feeds.feedburner.com/towerofsong in your pod software. Tower Song, celebrating 50 episodes and growing. Keep rocking.
So I'm here with Jerry Larson, who is the Green Party's candidate for Texas governor. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure.
Let's see. Basically, I really just want to get some basics down because I think there are a lot of people who aren't familiar with what the Green Party is all about. Can you give us maybe like a brief rundown of how the Green Party started and maybe I'm sure it's hard to just sort of generally say what it's all about. But
The short answer is that the Green Party is an alternate political party whose platform rests on social justice issues, ecological wisdom, nonviolence, and grassroots democracy. But in reality, on the ground, it's really a party of activists. It's been around the world for about 20 years now, and they're pretty active over in Europe, particularly in Germany. In the United States, it's been a shorter history, probably about 15 years around the country. We've gotten people elected in California in a lot of those little suburban towns that are named after saints. A lot of them have mayors that are in the Green Party.
But, oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of them do. It's like 300 elected officials, I think, across the United States that ran on partisan platforms anyway. Here in town, it's even shorter. In Texas and in Houston specifically, it's about 10 years that we've been a small party of activists with certain issues that we felt were important. Pushing them, particularly in 2000 and 2002, and now we're really geared up this year to have our opinions heard once again.
All right. Did the one thing that people always seem to be talking about with the Green Party and other independent parties is I'm curious about what your answer is to the argument that like voting for Green Party candidates take away from votes for Democratic candidates. Like what, you know, Susie, who connected us, has explained this to me a couple of times, and I understand it, but not in a way that I can explain. So maybe you can help.
Well, in Texas, we have it real easy. The Democrats and the Greens have had the same number of candidates elected to statewide offices in this state this decade, and unfortunately, that number is zero. And we've never made a difference in a Texas election. The story that people talk about, of course, is Nader in Florida in 2000. But actually, Nader in 2000 pulled from both parties about equally, surprisingly enough, and a lot of the people that voted for him said they wouldn't have gone to the polls otherwise. It's a big decision to vote for a third-party candidate, especially when you know the chances of him winning, or her winning, depending, are pretty low. And those people are making a conscious decision. I'm going to vote for a guy that I don't, or a woman, that I don't think is going to win this election because I want to make a statement. And that's where third parties really have made a difference over the years. The third parties in this country have been the first proponents on the national scene of a huge social issues over the years that eventually worked out. The 40-hour work week, the abolition movement, women's suffrage, the right to organize, child labor laws, for instance. And that's where they make the difference. Eventually, the rest of the country kind of catches on to what the activists and what the smaller parties are saying, and it's a conscious decision to change the debate.
Okay, so partly it's about letting the larger parties see that there really are people who are concerned about these issues that they don't take so quite so seriously.
Absolutely, and I think your average, for instance, with the Green Party, and the Libertarians probably have the same situation on the right with the Republicans. When I talk to most Democrats, they agree with us on almost every issue. But unfortunately, and it's partially because of the money in politics, the big guys need to continue getting in the funds. When they actually get into office, particularly on the national scene, they don't carry out what they say into practice. I mean, Bill Clinton, for instance, who I was incredibly excited about in 1992, when all of a sudden the Defense of Marriage Act with NAFTA, with welfare reform, each time he signed something like that or pushed it forward, I got a little less excited about Bill Clinton. And finally, the idealism side of me trumped perhaps the practical side to an extent. And people agree with me on this. Democrats agree with me on this. But, yeah, I mean, someone needs to follow through with what they say they're going to do, basically.
Right. There was someone that I talked to recently who was, like, hot about when I mentioned the Green Party. Even though I wish I had his email right here. Even though he agrees with, like, a lot of the things that the Green Party stands for, he's, like, he's pissed.
Yeah.
because, you know, he feels like we need to get Democrats in office as much as possible. And he's really, like, blaming the Green Party that Bush is in office. It was, like, so, but I wanted to throw that out at you just kind of to get.
We hear it a lot, and I want as many people to run. I think more people should run. I think that it should be easier to get on the ballot, and I think everybody ought to have a chance to make their voice heard. And so I don't think it's really stealing votes. It's that's kind of an arrogant attitude of, you know, you stole votes from so-and-so or so-and-so, because those votes don't belong to any one candidate until someone goes to the ballot box and actually casts their ballot.
That's an excellent point, to look at it that way.
Yeah, and that's it's pretty much what it's going to have to. In 2000, the two major candidates, at least in what they said, agreed on, and this is what I'm talking about president here, agreed on so many issues. In 2002, in the gubernatorial race in Texas, it can be argued that the Democrat was more conservative than the Republican candidate was. And Chris Bell, while he has more progressive credentials this year than certainly Tony Sanchez had in 2002, leaves a lot to be desired to many people as well, particularly on GLBT issues. So, Chris Bell, for instance, supported, and I'm not mudslinging, I'm just laying it out. Chris Bell supported Proposition 2, the marriage amendment, a couple of years back, and that's alienated a lot of people.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, I was trying to get there with the GLBT thing, because I'm glad you brought it up, because I have this ongoing thing of like this, because I'm gay and like a lot of my listeners are gay, but I have this like, wait a minute, this isn't a gay show, so I'm glad you brought it up and I didn't have to. So now, see, I'm not bringing up gay stuff, but I'm glad that you did that. So Green Party, I'm assuming, is in support of gay marriage and equal rights for gay people and all that stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, we're at a real disadvantage with that issue right now because, for instance, even if our entire slate of candidates were elected this fall, it's going to take another constitutional amendment now to turn around what the state did back in 2004. But, yeah, if the Greens were in charge, we wouldn't be picking and choosing which of us can get married. I work at a clinic in which I see it's a law clinic in which I see a large number of GLBT people. And they're really in a bind right now because we don't know what we can do with them. We don't know if they enter a contract to give for one to give the other partner some of their property, if they enter mutual wills, how that's going to stand up, or whether we're making something that resembles a marriage contract that's going to be found unconstitutional under Texas law now. And it's absolute discrimination, and it's a travesty.
Yeah. And there are so many parts of it because I was talking to a friend about it yesterday, I think, and it's just like it just happened. When I start talking about it, I get so like excited and wound up about it. But there's so many levels to it that I don't even think about, like what you just said, like from a point of view of the law, how do you do those things? I didn't even think about that part of it. That yeah.
Yeah, and on the national level, it's going to be used again this year, the gay marriage issue, to try to scare people back to the powers that be, who are a lot of people are very alienated from the political process right now, and they're hoping, I guess, to get their base back out to vote on that issue. And it's just horrible. When you look at the Constitution, and there are proposals to make a federal constitutional amendment over gay marriage, you know, the one-fifth or three-fifths of a person that we considered African Americans early in our history is still a blot on our national reputation. And to mm-hmm. when you have things, you have the First Amendment right to free speech, you've got all these wonderful things in the Bill of Rights, and to actually put another blemish on the Constitution, which is supposed to be about the rights of the people, I don't think it's going to happen. I hope there's enough people that are reasonable enough and see it for what it is, but it's always out there and it's a big threat.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I'm all wound up again. What do you think, like, as far as Green Party candidates getting congressional or presidential seats, what do you think that it would take for the party to grow to that extent?
Well, it's all about the local level. You know, there was Ralph Nader in 2000. He didn't run on the Green Party ticket in 2004, but he ran with us in 2000. And it's really the wrong way to start a political party that you want to have some real roots in the country or in the state. You need to start from the grassroots up. We assisted Ada Edwards here in Houston, for instance, when she ran for city council, and she's been great. We were involved in the Denise Parker campaign, the last couple campaigns for her, as a matter of fact, and there's Sue Lovell, and there's been several. And that's where you need to start, because that's where the differences begin, school boards, city councils, positions like that. In order for us to go any higher up, at least as we stand now, there's going to need to be changes in the voting system. We're going to need to have something called instant runoff voting, I feel, in order to get candidates that have a serious shot at those positions. But certainly in the community, that's where our focus has always been, and it's where it should remain. And I think if you have real people out there running for office who actually relate to people, a big part of the problem right now is that people don't feel at all connected to the political process. And certainly I know the activist community is all but given up. They say, okay, we'll do the direct action for the next 50 years because nobody in either major party are paying attention to us. And so you can get local positions, I think, that way, particularly if you're on the ground all the time with a good organization. And that's the way we're headed.
All right. Tell me the name of that new the type of voting you were saying, something runoff, immediate runoff elections? Is that
instant runoff voting, yeah. There's a bunch of different ways to do things better than we do it now. Instant runoff voting is the easiest way when you're trying to elect one person to a position like mayor or something. And it's basically what we do now, except all at one time. If you have, well, I'll take nationally, for instance, Nader, Bush, Gore, we'll say like 2000. A lot of people wanted to vote for Nader, but they said, you know, this is just the way it is. I can't vote for him. It's not practical. Under instant runoff voting, if everybody that wanted, what you do is you rank the candidates. And for instance, with me, I would have voted Nader number one, Gore number two, and maybe Bush number three if I put him on there at all. And if Nader ended up getting the fewest number first place votes, then his would be wiped out, and the number two choice for all his voters would go up to number one. And it's basically what happens in mayoral runoffs in this city. Everybody knows that if there's two fairly mainstream or liberal candidates and one conservative candidate, that one of the liberal candidates and the conservative candidate are going to be the one in the runoff. And that when it goes from three people to two people for a runoff, all those people that voted, for instance, in our last mayoral election, I think was, Chris Bell was two back. We'll say Chris Bell. All the people that voted for Chris Bell, who wasn't one of the final two, are going to end up voting for Bill White when it goes down to the general election. So it's really taking away the step of having to have a runoff. It's cheaper, and people get to vote their hopes and not their fears that way.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time to be with me today. Is there anything that I left out today that you'd like to throw in there?
Yeah, we are currently, Green Party of Texas is currently in the midst of a petition drive.
Yeah,
a little plug for that. We need 45,500 signatures by the end of May in order to get on the Texas ballot. You need to be people that didn't vote in the primary, didn't vote in any of the runoffs, and that are registered voters in the state of Texas. And they can check out the website at txgreens.org if they want to find out more about that. But we want to get on the race and in the race and on the ballot this November so that people have a real choice.
Okay, and people can volunteer to start getting those petitions signed, too.
Absolutely,
right?
You can volunteer, and actually, as of today, we are willing to pay people to do it. We've collected a little money, and it's the way everybody else does it, so we have a volunteer army out there. But can I give the number to call if you want to volunteer?
Yeah, you can give me
anything
you want.
Okay, great. Earl Gerhardt is running our petition drive, at least in Houston right now, and if you want to give us a hand for fun or profit, the number to call is 713-515-3433, and Earl will set you up with whatever you need.
Okay. What's that number of petition signatures we still need?
The number of signatures? I think we're doing pretty good. The website has an extremely low number for what we're up to. We need 45,500, and I think we're at about half that right now. So we're doing okay. We're looking forward
okay.
to it.
All right, and can people sign a petition on the website, or is it something that has to
you
be done?
You can download the petition off the website. Yeah, it's legal-sized paper,
okay.
But you can. And if you're excited about Kinky Friedman or Carol Strayhorn and you want to sign their petition, you can sign the Green Party's petition to get on the ballot in one of the independent candidates' petitions.
Okay, that's cool. Well, all right, I'll put all that information in the show notes too for the show once it gets up.
Okay.
And yeah. Sweet. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Michael.
You must
pleasure.
Be super busy.
And this concludes my interview with Jerry Larson. Thanks again for being on the show, Jerry. And I hope some of you guys learned some new things about the Green Party. I had a lot to learn, and I'm glad I did. I think I actually made a mistake in the beginning of that interview. I think I referred to him as the Green Party is an independent party, but that's an oxymoron. Am I right? Really, they're a political party, and the people like Strayhorn and Kinky Friedman are independent candidates because they're not with a party. Am I right on that? So anyway, the fun thing about this for me now is that I've just really settled into this being a learning experience for me and sort of documenting that learning. So I don't feel so bad about making errors like that, like I used to. And I'm not so afraid of saying the wrong thing because I've been honest about the fact that I don't know all of this. And that's part of my goal here, to educate myself and maybe some of you guys in the process. Yeah, Susie's calling me. She set up the she set up the interview for me. She got me connected with Jerry Larson. Anyway, so thanks, Susie, and I'll call you back later, but you may know that by the time you hear this. I want to go ahead and give out a special shout-out to my pal, David Parnell. I'm a little choked up. He was on episode 38. You guys who have been listening since then will know that. And I want to play this lovely song for you by Lena Lovitch. She's on IOTA. Her greatest hits is up there. So I was thinking that one of these songs would be perfect to play as a sort of birthday wish for my pal, David. Some of you guys who don't quite really love the music that I play, guess what? You're in for a treat because you may just hate this. But this is wackiness before wacky. Well, actually, When Wacky was cool. This is an 80s song. It's called Say When. I believe it's from her album Stateless. Could be wrong on that one, but this is Lena Lovitch. And this goes out to my pal, David Parnell. Happy birthday, David. Anyway. That is Lana Lovitch with Say When. My favorite thing about that song is just the random counting in different languages. That's interesting. Thanks, Lena. And happy birthday, David, who lives in Canada, and I won't get to see him on his birthday. But hopefully this is kind of like, it's not. It's not even close to seeing you in person. But what a lovely way for me to say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, I think we must have danced to that with underwear on our heads at some point, David. Or I know we did that to what's that? The woman that sings Stance, Buffalo Stance. What's, I can't remember her name, but we danced to those songs with underwear on our head. We should have danced to this one. Next up, I've got listener email, and I'm afraid I'm running out of time, so I'm not going to read it. I would like to say thank you, though, to Kiko from Visitronics for the package of porn and other earthly delights, including a DVD with a video for Tainted Love by Coil, which features Mark Almond. You don't know how happy that makes me. Like, all this stuff is cool in this pack, but that is cool. That's an awesome video. And as funny as it feels to have copies of Coil stuff, I just think of them as being very witchy. And, you know, but that's what we got. Tonight I'm going to go to the Menil Collection and see a performance with my friend Tiffany. Hi, Tiffany. Tiffany's listening now, too. She got an iPod, and we got her all hooked up. John Cage prepared piano pieces. And that's what I want to end the show with you for you tonight, today. Yeah, well, whenever you listen to it, what time of day. Okay, so two quick things about John Cage. To me, he's most famous for the piece 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds, which was premiered on August 29th of 1952. This is a mini lecture for you. I first heard of John Cage and his work in probably I was about 26, and I had just gotten sober and started back in music school. I was going to Houston Community College and taking a 20th century music class. And one of the groups in my class, we all got assigned to do different projects, and one of the people did a John Cage piece for prepared piano, where they actually set up a grand piano the way it was set. Like, the score for the music comes with a map of the piano and where to put the, I remember there being pencil erasers and paper clips and washers and screws and different things just laid on top of the strings, so that it became like a percussion ensemble for one person to play. 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds is a really famous piece of his, too, that you may, guys may know. But when I first heard about this piece, I was just amazed, because I realized, because of his approach to music being chance. He's an American composer, by the way, for those of you who may not know. The thing that's so interesting about this piece to me is that it flip-flops things. So suddenly the performer is not necessarily doing the music. The piece is intended for... the performer doesn't play anything. And there are certain times when the pages are supposed to be turned and the piano lid is lifted and put back down, but the piano isn't actually played. And the whole point of it is that the music is whatever whatever sounds happen while this is going on. So there are all these interesting theories about why 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds, like this one that I found, minus, let's see, 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds is 273 seconds long, and minus 273 degrees Celsius is the lowest temperature that can be obtained in any macroscopic system. It's referred to as absolute zero. Since the piece involved absolutely no playing for 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds, this is a plausible theory. But, you know, I think people just have fun trying to figure out what it was about, which to me is also a part of the results of the piece, you know? It's part of the piece. The silence and the sounds that happen in the auditorium when it's being played, or I have a couple of recordings of it, and it's the same thing. Like, if I push play, suddenly the piece is about whatever sounds are going on in my apartment or my car or wherever I'm listening. So that really, to me, was an awesome... That's the wrong word to use. Awesome is so not awesome. But it was a really interesting new way of expressing things. So there you go. That's my little take on John Cage and his prepared piano music, and also his 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds. So that's a little mini music lecture for you. Would you like to learn more? You can go to the library or look it up on the interweb. I'll put a link to the Wikipedia entry for John Cage, too. But, of course, you can go to wikipedia.org and search for John Cage. Let me throw out some thank yous to those of you who sent me some cash last week. It was very much needed, and I got to put gas in my car, and I got to eat. Those are two things that I like to do every day. Well, I eat every day. I don't put gas in my car every day. So thank you again. I really appreciate those donations. If anyone else would like to donate to the show, there's a link on MikeyPod.com. I feel bad that I'm not naming anyone by name, but I never know if that's what people expect. But I am making a list. There's a little list of links of people who have supported me throughout the run of the show. So I'm going to make sure everyone's name is there. And if you notice that yours isn't there, well, I need to make sure it is, because that'd feel weird if that were me and I was saying, put my name on your list. So anyway, that's what I've got. So here, this piece is by John Cage. It's the first of his three dances for two prepared pianos. The pianist is Patrick Moraz, and I couldn't find many notes about this. So I don't know whether he played both piano parts and mixed them together, or if there are two pianists. Patrick Moraz, if you don't know, was a keyboard player for Yes and also for Electric Light Orchestra. You can learn more at patrickmoraz.com. And also go to yubu.com if you want to learn more about this type of music. I still am not sure what that site, where it came from, but it's amazing. So you can learn about a lot of different contemporary composers. We don't really give them a lot of notice nowadays. So I'm going to give you this quote from John Cage, and then we're going to go right into the song. He says, if you develop an ear for sounds that are musical, it is like developing an ego. You begin to refuse sounds that are not musical, and that way cut yourself off from a good deal of experience. So to me, that is saying we have preconceived notions about what music is supposed to sound like, about tonality, major, minor, all that kind of stuff. And so when we hear things like what you're about to hear, sometimes we refer to it as shit or a bunch of crap. Or makes my whore hole itch. Any of those things. But I'd like for you guys to take. It's about maybe 4 minutes long. It's a really interesting piece, and it's a piano. Remember that while you're listening to it. This is a piano, or two pianos, or one piano recorded twice. You know, you get what I'm saying. So thanks for listening, guys. The show's a little longer than usual, but it's not going to be too bad, really. Thanks for hanging in with me, and I will talk to you guys probably next week, if not sooner. 206-339-6682 is the voicemail line. You can email me, MikeyPod@gmail.com, and also go to the site, MikeyPod.com. Here is Patrick Moraz playing John Cage.
You've been listening to Mikey Pod on the Bayou with Michael Herron. Mikey wants your input to the show. Do you have a comment about something that was said on the show? A review or a promotion of a cultural event, especially in the Houston area? Or you just want to say hi? Email is MikeyPod@gmail.com. The Mikey Pod Show hotline, 206-339-6682. And record it down for all to hear. See you next time right here for Mikey Pod on the Bayou. MikeyPod.com.